Welcome to our podcast, Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we will be discussing La Madre de los Gatos by Brian Beck. Cheers to starting the conversation.
La Madre is a great little Spanish style piece. It's about 3 minutes in length. It does have split clarinet parts, alto, trumpet, and trombone, but they're only split into two parts. You need a minimum of 5 percussion on this, and you might have to tweak the percussion two part if you only have 5 percussionists. 6 percussionists is better. All of the percussion parts in this are pretty important to add to the style. It is in 3-4 and in the key of concert E flat, and it's about 3 minutes in length. So that's all the big major stats for La Madre. It's also about, on the Texas PML, it's a grade 3. So definitely appropriate for a middle school ensemble or a non-varsity, sub-non-varsity high school.
Yes, this piece is so fun and the kids love it too. You know, at the middle school level, we kind of have to start it a little bit slower and work our way up, but I imagine a high school could probably play it pretty close to tempo pretty quick. The piece overall starts off at 132 and then it goes even faster in the middle. So it does require, you know, some musical skills where the kids can tongue quicker, can count quicker,
can move their fingers
a little bit quicker, especially in the woodwind instruments. But anyway, percussion is very important. There's big chimes, there's big castanets, maracas, timpani. All of those parts are featured and very important. The whole piece starts off with a little opening from first trumpet, flute, oboe, first clarinet, and saxophones together. And I like the way that Mr. Beck colors the music with sax and clarinet a lot throughout this piece, as well as, of course, trumpet since it's Spanish style. The low brass get to come in with a little response to the opening, and then we get back to the same people doing the same little da-da-da-da-da, lows, 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 da-da-da-da-da, lows, lows, lows. Then we start our little Spanish groove. Low brass, love it because it's not hard to count, but it's fun and it kind of sounds a little like oompa-y, so they like to like dance to it and stuff.
This ostinato continues a lot throughout this piece, and I think we talk about, when I've played this with my bands, we talk about beat three leading to beat one. So giving just a little bit more emphasis on beat three, one and three, just to help kind of give that a little bit more forward momentum.
The tuba line and the bass clarinet line are also really important, and they do not mimic the trombone and euphonium line. So that is pretty neat, but it's just something different for this march or this Spanish style song. The altos and the flutes and oboe have the melody at nine. And again, the altos get to be pretty important. Lots of leading through, like Laura just said, 3 leads to 1, teaching the students that. There's so many opportunities for phrasing on this piece. You know, building it up for 2, getting softer for 2. Like, it's a very lyrical piece, even though it's not. It's just so beautiful because it's playing lyrically on top of the ostinato underneath with the low brass.
There are a lot of rhythms in here where you have an eighth note and 2/16ths or 2/16ths coming in after an eighth rest. The 16ths are often slurred, and it's really important for clarity of articulation to make sure that those are tongued, or that we don't have, you know, sometimes younger players might do air starts instead of starting with the tongue, and all of that just to match clarity needs to be, you know, articulated. Ta, ta.
And even before you get there, I think it's a good idea to take all the slurs out so that you can line it up. Later on in the piece, Laura and I were talking about, I remember my flutes had trouble with one spot, and so we just took all the slurs out to make sure that they can keep everything really even. So that's another just like practice strategy. At 13, the clarinets get to take over the melody along with tenor sax, and they get to play low down in the shallomo register, which is always really fun.
I love this part.
Yeah, it sounds really pretty. You know, one of the tricks is making sure that like your low brass don't ever get too loud over the melody. You still have the ostinato going in horn and sax. in this moment, but then like the low brass have like a dotted half note getting stronger and then getting softer again. And it's really important that they don't go above and beyond mm-hmm. what the melody is. And so just that balancing, you know, that's always important to think about, but this one has a lot of different little layers to think about.
The snare part is pretty active throughout this, but it's a kind of in along with what Katie's saying about the low brass part, it's important that your snare player be able to play with a lot of control at softer dynamics.
Absolutely.
Because it's really easy with the way that the part is written for them to overbalance the percussion section and then the ensemble as well. So they need to be a pretty strong player that can play controlled softly.
Yep. In response to the clarinet melody here at 13, the flutes and oboes have this cute little one and it's just really cute, and they do it again in like four measures, but it's just adorably written. It's not supposed to be loud, it's just like a little fun effect. Then the lows do get a little bit stronger, kind of take over for a second, then it goes back to the clarinets with their little moment.
In this little section, while the clarinets are doing this cool thing down low, there are a couple of places in here where it's often slurred through here. And Katie's already referenced the fact that it is like this lyrical style over the rhythmic ostinato. Younger players can clip the ends of those slurs, especially when we see little two-note slurs. Tia, tia, tia. And it's really important that they follow through on that and not clip that. Make it as lyrical sounding as possible.
Yes, absolutely. And then we keep going with the clarinet melody with the little flute and oboe back and forth into measure 23. Then the whole band leads up and we have three accented quarter notes here. One, two, three, one. Then the trumpet, flute, and oboe come down into the next measure, which is 25. That part right there sometimes can sound really immature.
Yes.
In younger bands or bands that haven't spent enough time on it, because the trumpets have to come in on a upper E and the flutes are on a D and oboe too. And that's just not a great tuning note on any of those instruments. So spending time isolating that little line, maybe find one or two players per section that can actually play it in tune with a good sound and accuracy. You know, nothing's worse than a trumpet trying to come in on the right partial.
That's right.
And then they don't. And
or
it
trying
may,
to
takes
squeeze
away.
That note
yeah.
out and sounding really tense.
Yeah. Because there's nothing else going on there. So that part has
it's very
to be
exposed.
Set. Yes. Then at 25, we land, and the whole band, except for clarinet and sax, has this little dotted half note leading up 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, and 1, and 1. It's so fun. And they get to just crescendo and make those like dotted quarter notes be real accented and firm style. And then all underneath them, you've got clarinet and sax going, playing all eighth notes essentially, but they're not all playing all eighth notes all the time. It
it's
sounds
written,
really
it's
cool.
Written really,
yeah.
It's written really well.
It sounds active and fun, and the kids like this little moment, and they get to do the crescendo decrescendo too. And then there is a pickup note into measure 31 where the whole band is going to come in stronger. Mm-hmm. So we've stopped at piano, and then everybody comes in mezzo forte. It's meant to be like a big moment.
We want to hear a difference here for sure.
Yep. And then at 31, the flute and the trumpet and the clarinet and alto one have the melody. And then we got the rhythmic ostinato again underneath. But everybody's in here. This is the first, like, really big full moment. And you can decide what works for your band. At 34, there is a moment for a breath mark in the melody if you want to take it. Or you can have the kids push through and make it sound more like an eight measure phrase.
Which is what I personally prefer.
Which is what I did too. So when I played this, I thought it sounded more elongated and lyrical, taking my first breath with the melody at 38 instead of 34. So the
and
way
we
you
even added a crescendo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And the way you have to do that is plan out the breath marks for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that way they're not like, well, that's where it feels good to take a breath. I mean, you're right. You're not wrong. So you have to think about, okay, I'm going to have my flute players, they're going to sneak a breath and measure 35 between beats 2 and 3. And then another flute player is going to breathe after beat 1 and 36. So going through and either marking that, pre-marking that for the kids or saying, you know, in sectionals. You four kids are going to play
B.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You four kids are going to breathe in 35. You four are going to breathe in 36 or whatever it might be. But planning out those breath marks will help the students. So that way they're not just relying upon their like natural instinct to take a breath every four measures. Then we're going to just continue that melody line. Going into measure 42,
we're all leading up again. I'm sorry, Katie. Yeah, go ahead. This is the same melody and type of style that the clarinets had earlier. Mm-hmm. So we're copy-pasting all those stylistic things we talked about with the clarinets, not clipping the ends of the slurs, mm-hmm. making it sound as lyrical as possible. It needs to be exactly the same here.
And then we end the same way with the 1, 2, 3, 1, then the trumpet and oboe. They have that same little line coming down. So again, find your best ones. The whole band is piano at 43. We get that same moment again where the saxes and the clarinets get this cool little eighth note thing and the band is leading up again and getting softer.
There's a lot of repetition in this piece. Yes. So it's one of the things that is nice, even though it has some challenging moments to teach and they're really good teaching opportunities, once you've taught a chunk that you can essentially copy paste to other sections of the piece. So it does make for, I think it makes it a little bit easier to teach because of that.
Yep. Now we have a new section, pickups into 49. Everybody is forte now.
And style change.
And
a big style change.
Now we're all accented. There are not a lot of slurs happening. Everybody is forte. The low brass get the melody for the first time and low reeds. So they're really excited for that always. The trumpets have it first, actually. So trumpets go 3 and 1, 2 and 3. And lows come in 2, 3, 1, 2 and 3. So they're kind of like in a conversation here. Then above that, flute, oboe, clarinet have this cute little one and trill. And I did not let all of my kids play it because it's a G trill above the staff for the flutes. It's very high. And it can be too much. You know, I don't want to take away from the low brass and the trumpets here. So I think what I did is I had one kid play the upper G trill and I had everybody else just play a G in the staff and not trill. And I only had probably one oboe at the time, so that worked out. And even the first clarinet is on a high A.
High A to B flat trill. And I think the clarinet color, I mean, I agree completely with Katie. I like the idea of one or two flute players and taking the other flute players down. Since it's just in the first clarinet part, the clarinet part is really what I think kind of adds the color combination.
Yep.
So having, you know, your first clarinets, if you just have two first clarinets or three first clarinets, if you're limiting what you're doing in the flute, I think that you'll get the sound and the color you're looking for without covering up what's happening, the most important stuff that's happening in the brasses.
Yeah, they just need to be the kings here. And then trumpets have the melody with saxes at 51, just like a moving eighth note line. Low brass is chilling again. Then they come back up and they get to have another moment at 53, 54. Same little trills. We don't want to overbalance them. Then everybody's accenting and getting softer leading into 57.
So this part with the eighth notes, in my experience with this, the second clarinets are also doubling what's in the horn, trumpet, and alto tenor here. And matching that articulation, especially from your reed instruments, that was something we had to work on because it is a complete style change. So a real firm articulation and making sure that, you know, the first trumpets sound as good as the second clarinets down in a lower register of their instrument, just being intentional about matching that articulation.
Yep. I think that's important, of course. And then at 57, we get a new moment again. Now we don't have the accented style. It's more lyrical again. We have dropped out a lot of the voices. It's kind of like a woodwind choir mm-hmm. here.
Yeah.
But with a horn and euphonium play, so the color instruments. So the woodwinds, clarinet one, alto one, have the melody, tenor, sax, and horn have a tenor, like a counter melody line. And even most of the percussion has thinned out here too. So the percussion doesn't play for two measures. Then they come in at a louder dynamic and then get softer. Then they don't play again. And then they come in at a louder dynamic and then they get softer. So it's kind of like an echo effect. And they're leading and helping the wind players above them, because that's what the winds are doing, is they're crescendoing up for two and then decrescendoing mm-hmm. down for two. These lyrical lines are really well written, and the dynamics are written in for you for what you would want to hear.
And they're really important. I mean, it's important that the whole ensemble that's playing at this point buy into that phrasing. Lots of accidentals in this section. Yes. So just making sure that your students are,
the rule of accidentals. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or if they don't, or they're not so comfortable, mark it in for them. There's big like alto sax moment here where they go a little bit above the staff. You want to bring that color out. I think Mr. Beck wrote it that way intentionally for them to be a little featured.
They have a lot of, the altos have a lot of C sharps, sustained C sharps in this section. So I would teach them covered C sharp and have them use covered C sharp here for tuning to make sure that the tuning aligns with what's happening in the first clarinets.
Yep. And then we're getting, again, the percussion's kind of coming in and out here. Then percussion goes away for a while. And so the band has to have really good pulse here. Mm-hmm. They have to be watching you to stay totally together. We still have the clarinet one and alto melody with horn and tenor having a counter melody. And then euphonium also helping out with that. We finish out this little thought at 72, and we kind of have a little bit of it's not a key change necessarily in this section, but it kind of sounds like it because of all the accidentals written in. We have a final like arrival point chord at 72, and it can be very out of tune. E natural in trombone, G in trombone, C in euphonium, E natural in flute, C sharp in sax. So spending some time on that arrival mm-hmm. point chord, I think, is really important. And then we're kind of doing the same little lyrical again, where for two measures we're leading up, but now the whole band has joined back in, like right. tuba, barry, sax, all the lower voices are back in. And then we have the same thing where percussion's kind of out for two measures, other than bells. Bells are playing along with the flute. And then we get into measure 79. We have another arrival point chord on C sharp in alto and C sharp in trumpet. So just the like the tuning in this section is pretty, it can be pretty scary yes. if you don't spend some time on each chord.
There are some, when the melody part kind of arrives and it is at a cadence point on a longer valued note, there are several instruments, middle and lower voices, that have a 1 and 3, 1. And even though this is super lyrical, those happen on the same note for each of those instruments. And it's important that they articulate really clearly so that it doesn't sound muddy.
We made it like staccato accent, staccato accent.
Ta-ta, ta-ta, yes.
Yeah. So I think that that is a great point. So that way you can actually hear that articulation. 81, we're continuing with the melody and the upper people. And then we crescendo up as a full group to 85 with that same 1 and 3. And then the everybody that has accented quarters here, I taught them to play each one dynamic level louder yep. to lead into 87. 1, 2, 3, 1. Then we're back at the beginning. 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 2, 3. So it's the same as the beginning again, same concept styles, and then a whole new shift. Everybody on beat one plays forte, and everybody in the whole band plays piano on beat two. And then there's an accelerando and a crescendo. We spent a lot of
yes.
time
you have
on
to
91 to 95 because it's four measures where the whole band is getting faster and getting louder. And you have to practice getting louder at the same rate, getting faster at the same rate. So, and it's the same note. It's not, they're not changing notes. It's the same note over and over. So you just have to teach the kids how to do it, how to listen, how to match their neighbors side to side. Don't get louder than your friend.
Right.
Don't go faster than the conductor. And you go into one here too. So you have to conduct in three. Then eventually you're
when
in
you arrive,
one at
you arrive
95.
In one. Yep. Now, when we taught this, like we isolated those two concepts because it's the same note. We isolated the accelerando and we isolated the dynamics. So to teach it that way. So like if you just like don't change the tempo and let them work on playing every note and just getting slightly louder together at the same rate while articulating the same way as well. What younger kids are going to want to do, the louder they play, the longer they're going to play.
Right.
So keeping the style the same as they get louder. Then we isolated the accelerando. Let's just do that. We took it away from the instrument and had them clap. So that they were really focusing on just watching and doing that accelerando together, then putting it on the instrument. I would say, you know, if it was any other piece, you could do that on a concert F, but it's the same note all the way through. Right. So, I mean, you don't need to do that. Once they are really secure with the clapping, then you can mix those two things together. Put it together, add the dynamics, add the accelerando. But these four measures... I have heard these four measures can seriously make or break some ensembles.
Absolutely.
So it is so important. Don't put it off. It's so important to work these four measures and make it a really solid transition. Otherwise, when you land at 95, it can be a disaster and take 4, 5, 6, 8 measures before the ensemble settles in.
Yep. So at 95, it's written prestissimo con fuego. So it's in one at 100. So 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. It's actually faster than that. It goes really fast. And my flute, it's flutes only. They struggled so much with clipping the third note, like Laura's already mentioned a lot, and also making the first note too short, because it's written tongue, slur, slur. Ta 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 ta,
and it goes from a C to a D. C C D E C E flat. C C D E flat. C C D E flat. And that's tough technique.
I know the pinky and every. It just like it's kind of a thing you gotta work on like right away. Like make sure that your flutes feel really comfortable with this part. It is fun. They love it. It's just something that they have to be really even. Ta ta da da ta ta da da ta ta da da ta ta ta. They have to be really, really even. Clarinet and oboe come in along with bass clarinet as like a little response after four measures with tambourine as well. It's a cute little color choice. Then they keep going with their melody with the clarinets and the altos coming in underneath them. Then at 109, all the woodwinds come in. 1, 3, 1, 3, 1, 3, 1.
They are going to clip that quarter note. Yes. Oh my gosh, it drives me nuts. 1, 3, 1, 3, 1. Yeah.
And it's all a phrase. Yes. So they come in strong, just like the percussion did before, where they came in at mezzo piano and then got to piano. They come in at mezzo forte and then get down to piano. So teaching them that is a whole phrase. And I taught that they were not going to breathe between 112 and 113, because now we have the same thing, the opposite direction. Now they're going from piano to forte. So it's a 4-measure decrescendo followed by a 4-measure crescendo. And I taught that all as one thought.
Which in one, that's not right. Difficult for them to do, right? So what we did to help keep them from clipping that quarter note at the end of this section is I had them play just a dotted half note. So they played their first note as a dotted half note and didn't change. Da, 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 da. Da, da, da. And we talked about using dotted half note air, even though our fingers are going to be changing. Once we were sure that they could play the dotted half notes all the way through and it felt, you know, connected and flowy, we went back and added the extra quarter note in there and kept the air the same. The goal is that it sounds the same. So that's a little a trick that you can use to practice this section.
At 117, we have a final arrival point. And also, I forgot to mention, on those four measures where we're going from piano to forte, the brass come back in there.
Yes.
So the whole band sounds more full and strong. And at 117, all the upper woodwinds have the 1, 2, and 3, 1, 2, and 3 that the flutes had before. And xylo adds in. And that's a really cool color choice.
It is.
So work with your percussionist to try to find the best mallet choice to make it sound like really... really nice. It should be a little bit of a harder mallet, in my opinion.
Yes.
I think it makes it sound more awesome above the band.
And then we want to make sure all the woodwind players, like I told them, listen to the xylophone player.
Yeah.
That's how your fingers need to be as accurate as the xylophone.
Yep. Then the brass have the little 1, 2, 3, 1 that the clarinets and saxes had before. We're continuing this thought for quite a while. Then we go back into the little lyrical thing at 131, where we start strong, get softer for four, then get louder for four. But now it's the full band instead of just the woodwinds, and making sure that everybody again gets the same dynamic level down and it's the same balanced. Back up. Yes. You don't have like one trombone trying to go for it and get louder than everybody else. And the trombone, speaking of, is up above the staff here. So tuning is also pretty important. Lots of accidentals in this moment, just like we had before. And then at 139, we have a cute little chromatic-y thing. We are forte, and then all the little upper woodwinds are doing a chromatic scale down. Then at four measures later, the brass get to have a little chromatic-y thing going back up as they get louder.
The woodwinds are slurring down. The brass are articulating tonguing. Up, so just making sure that matches.
And then the next four measures, the woodwinds again play. This time it's not chromatic, but they play staccato. So it's like slurred to regular firm tongued to staccato.
Separated.
And then the whole band has one and two, one and one.
Cool,
or sorry,
hemiola.
I was thinking one and because of it being in one, but you guys get it. Yeah, it's a hemiola, the whole band minus upper woodwinds, accented strong. You're going to lead up to 155. Then it's a big percussion moment. Chimes get the melody. Timpani has a really cool part.
Is really...
I told my kid, like, go crazy town. Like, it is so neat.
Timpani and chimes, I think, are most important right here. And then the full ensemble is playing one, just a quarter note on beat one, and that the tendency is to be way too short on that
note. No,
making sure that it's a full
value.
Body and resonant. One rest.
One
rest.
And one. Then they have to come in, like, right before. And then they come in strong, and the woodwinds lead us out with a chromatic line up to the last note. And then the last note needs to also be long and full value.
The pickup note, that eighth note pickup note.
Sorry, I did say it wrong. Yeah.
It is fast, and it has to be articulate. Ta-ta, ta-ta. All right, that is something that we had to work on to make sure that we aligned it correctly and that it was clear in the articulation. And then last note, just like we talked about the notes at 155 and 157, make sure that that's full body, resonant. Don't clip that note too short.
This piece is so much fun.
Kids love it.
Absolutely love it. It's not too hard as an individual part. Like, they're not going to look at it and be like, I can't play this. But it comes together well as long as all the kids know their individual parts and can watch really well, because there's a lot of activity.
And the tempo is fun. I think that's one of the things that they look at it and might see a lot of white notes on the page. But the tempo really is what... You know, I think it makes the technique a little bit more challenging and a little bit more fun.
Well, we hope you will program La Madre de los Gatos sometime in the future. And thank you for joining us on this episode of
Band BFFs.